the challenge when being on your own is getting new cases, right? Finding that new business.
All right, lights, camera, action. What's up, everyone? Here for another recording, a live episode of the Managing Partners Podcast. Today, I have Gary Martasio on the show. He's down in Tampa. He runs an employment firm, and he's going to tell us a story here in a second. But Gary, welcome to the show. Gary started his own firm, startup firm. And so we're going to be just going through the ins and outs and struggles and rewards of starting up your own firm. Obviously, this show's all about running a business, in particular a law firm business, always trying to learn and know what's going on out there. So excited to hear Gary's story. So Gary, welcome, brother.
Thanks so much for having me, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. It's been good to get to chat with you. Just so you all know, any guests I have on the show, I always talk to them first. This is not a show where you just sign a form up and show up and I just ask you questions. You know, I wanted to get to know everybody and see what they're about first. So it's cool though, because I get, you know, like I already talked to Gary and we've already had a video discussion and, you know, learned a bunch about it before this conversation. And it makes it a lot easier to have a second conversation. So pro tip for any of you podcasters out there, if you got your own legal podcast or something like that, you know, have a pre-discussion. I go on shows all the time where it's like, you just show up and you're like, I don't know anybody. I don't know what's going on. I just think it's a lot easier this way. Garrett, tell us your story. How did you become a lawyer? And you're in Tampa and in the law that you are. Like, tell us what's up.
Appreciate that. So, you know, it's really funny. I didn't really have aspirations to be a lawyer growing up. It kind of happened pretty fast. I played baseball my whole life. Played baseball through college. You know, like most people that are playing sports, you kind of think you're going to play forever. You know, that forever ended in college for me. I was at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida, just outside of Orlando.
I love that area.
Yeah, it's just beautiful, right?
The sweet spot. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I get to, you know, and sorry, I'll try to make this quick, but I get to the end of the road there with baseball, and I was like, oh, what am I going to do? I think I want to coach baseball. So I get into that, grad assistant coaching college for about 2-3 months. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if this is for me. You know, I liked playing a lot more than I liked coaching. And a buddy of mine, best friend of mine, he's an attorney now. He tells me, you should go to law school. His dad was an attorney. You know, it was what he was focusing on after baseball. I played with him as well. And I was like, you know what? Sounds like a great idea. And it was right around the like financial crisis. So there's really no jobs. This was 2008, 2009. So I was like, yeah, why not? I'll go hide out in law school for a little bit and see what happens. And yeah, I ended up, you know, taking the LSAT, the entrance exam, and get up to Florida State University where I went to law school. Yeah, it was a great time. Florida State was awesome. Great experience. Still didn't know what I wanted to do after law school. I didn't really want to do anything traditional. But yeah, eventually the same people that hit out in law school or any other grad school during the financial crisis now all came out and were looking for jobs in 2012. And when I graduated, the law market was pretty saturated. There was, you know, wasn't a whole lot of opportunity with anything else. So I said, all right, I guess I'm going to be a traditional lawyer. I took the first job that I got. I guess I'll say I was looking for jobs on the plaintiff side. So I took the first plaintiff side job that I got. It was an employment law firm, plaintiff's employment law firm, and just ended up loving it and worked with that firm for 12 years until I started my own firm about 6 months ago. So that's the story. I've loved every minute of it since. I like this this area of law. It's really interesting. It's fun. It's cool. It keeps you on your toes. Crossed off a lot of boxes, and yeah, it's a good way to make a living. So. Yeah, I've been happy with stumbling upon this area of law.
Yeah, so that's awesome. So you're helping employees on the plaintiff's side. You know, a lot of firms I come across that are employment law are on the other side of the fence. So that's what you do. In business for 6 months. And here you are in the podcast. And I want to say you had someone reach out to me, I believe, saying, hey, have Gary on the podcast. He's been in business for 6 months and he's doing podcast outreach and being on shows. I think that's pretty impressive, because using the first year or two or three, you're not even, I mean, you're just head down trying to get a lead, trying to do the work, trying to get your feet underneath you. So tell me a little bit about how, you know, the first 6 months have been, and like kind of what you've accomplished in the short amount of time to be like, you know what, I need to be on podcasts. I need to get myself out there. What's that been like?
Absolutely. Yeah. So honestly, my day-to-day work feels pretty much the same as it did when I was with the firm. You know, being in this area of law for 12 years, you know, I basically just replicated everything I was doing with my firm and, you know, the process and, you know, how to work cases, all that stuff stays the same. You know, so things have been great. The challenge when being on your own is getting new cases, right? Finding that new business. But it's been good. It's been good. You know, we've been using many different sources to get new cases. Online marketing, of course, is number one. Have some good referral relationships with some other law firms. Yeah, word of mouth. Word of mouth's been great. Doing this for 12 years, I mean, I've handled thousands of cases. So you start seeing, you know, someone's cousin, sister, brother, nephew come around, right? You know, I'm getting to the age where, you know, I'm approaching 40. I'm 39 right now, where a lot of friends or friends of friends are having issues, which, yeah, my younger years of practicing didn't really happen that much, you know. And if it did, people really weren't bringing claims. But now, you know, approaching the 40s, I'm seeing a lot of people having issues, pregnancy discrimination, things like that pop up more and more. So yeah, I've got a pretty good network. I'm based out of Tampa, Florida, but like you were saying, practice in some other states. I'm in 9 different states. So yeah, it's been good. It's finding cases has been good. There's a lot of people with employment issues, which I don't think that's ever going to change, you know, regardless of where we're sitting in a good or bad economy. I think it's kind of cyclical. So yeah, either side of it, you can kind of benefit off of that. You know, there's always going to be issues one way or the other. But yeah, things have been great. Short answer to your question, has been great so far. And I'm really happy with the decision to go out on my own and try to build something for myself. I think that's what I was missing being with a bigger firm, which it was awesome. I had a great experience there. The firm's called Spielberger Law Group. We'll give them a plug. I mean, they're an outstanding firm. I had outstanding experience there. But I really just wanted to build something for myself, build something. Yeah, it's been so far so good.
Yeah, that's awesome. I forgot. Yeah, you're multi-state. So you're in nine states?
Nine states, yep. Florida, Illinois, Massachusetts, Arizona, North Carolina, Texas, Tennessee, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. I believe that covers it.
That's pretty awesome. So obviously at your previous firm, you were adding those states and growing that. So, I mean, it sounds like you're a pretty big asset over there at the old firm.
Right, right. Yeah, they, you know, a lot of the attorneys at my prior firm have licenses in multiple states. You know, I think with employment law, because you've got to be pretty selective with cases just because of at-will employment laws. Not every person that gets fired has a case where, you know, in personal injury, you know, if someone gets rear-ended, they're going to have a case to some extent, probably, right? It just depends on a couple factors here and there. But with employment law, it's a lot more complicated, and the acceptance rate of cases is very low. If you get, you know, 100 leads, you're probably only finding 10 of them that have an actual case and a claim. So because of that, it's best to have a wider reach. I don't know many people that can survive just getting cases from one city. Maybe one state. There's a lot of people that survive off of one state, but one region, you have to cast a wider net, I guess, is what I'm saying, just because of the nature of employment law.
No, that's a good point. I have some PI clients that like literally focus on one city, and that's it. They don't even go across the state. I got plenty that go across the state, and then I got, you know, some are multi-state, but it tends to be more city or region specific, and there's lots of lead potential just in that area that you're still not even, it's not like they're getting all the leads. That's interesting. That makes sense though. So for employment law, to spread yourself out a little bit, to pick up more cases. Today's episode is brought to you by Answering Legal. Now, I just switched my company, Array Digital, over to Answering Legal, and it's made my life a whole lot easier. If I can't get to the phone, their 24/7 virtual receptionists take the call and take them through a full intake process, so we never miss new business again. Now, Answering Legal has been at this for more than a decade, and they specialize in answering phone calls for law firms like yours. They even have a brand new, easy-to-use app, and they integrate with all the top legal softwares and platforms. So, for my listeners today, we actually have a special deal of a 400-minute free trial offer of Answering Legal services that you can try out by going to answeringlegal.com/array. You can also call 631-437-4803 and use special code DAISY. That's my last name, DAISEY. So go check them out and let's get back to the show. We talked about this before, but remote employees, you know, so like I have 50 remote employees. Across, I don't know, 24 states probably at this point. And so kind of like what that looks like too. So, you know, for anyone listening, lawyers who have remote employees, or any business that has that, you know, so say my remote employee is in one of your states, but I'm in Virginia. Like, what does that look like and how does that change things?
So I think either an attorney licensed in the state that the employee works out of, or someone licensed in Virginia could handle it. I think it could easily be handled either way. I think the person could probably get away with filing a claim in either state, the one that they live and complete their work in, or where they're reporting to. And that remote employee is going to have the same rights, and you know, the company's going to have to follow the same laws as it would with its, you know, brick and mortar employees. Now, FMLA is where it gets a little tricky, the Family Medical Leave Act, and that's still kind of, the law is still kind of up in the air on that right now. The Department of Labor is the agency that offers guidance on the FMLA, and while I don't think it's entirely been clear in every federal court circuit as to how this is going to be interpreted, but what the Department of Labor is saying is those remote employees, their work site, per the Department of Labor, which is how you measure if someone's eligible for FMLA, their work site is considered where their headquarters of the company is, or the office of that company that they report to. Their work site isn't considered their home. So that's where you want to be careful, because I see a lot of employers making the mistake of saying, okay, we don't have 50 employees within a 75-mile radius of where that person's home is, which 50 employees within the 75-mile radius is the FMLA eligibility criteria. And in actuality, the work site that you need to measure whether you have 50 employees within a 75-mile radius of is the office that that employee reports to, which if you're in Virginia and that employee is sitting, let's say, in Tampa, Florida, where I am, and it's based off of how many employees you have within a radius of that Virginia office that the person reports to. So it's still up in the air. I mean, some employers, I guess, could take a more aggressive position than others and kind of see how the court fleshes it out. I've been kind of monitoring some cases to see how things are going to transpire. And like anything, I'm sure California courts may rule differently than, you know, Texas and whatnot. And you're going to see maybe a Supreme Court case, you know, in the near future on it. It's very interesting. It's an evolving area of the law.
Essentially, yeah, I think also, my office, 75-mile radius, I probably have 9 or 10 at the most. The rest are in other states. Interesting to know that. But it, I like, you know, the how you, you know, getting lead sources and being multi-state and in your field versus, again, you know, criminal or divorce or the other areas of law that I'm more familiar with, honestly. You know, I guess that's another challenge too. You know, like you said, you need, you know, a lot of leads. A lot of them might not have a case. but you might have paid for those leads, or, you know, online marketing or PPC or SEO, but you have to get out there, make a big reach, probably build a lot of referral partners. Other attorneys, I would assume, is a big part of your growth plan. So the podcasting makes sense. Everyone send Gary some leads.
There we go.
Yeah, and the thing is, the reality is, everyone listening right now, most of my guests are PI, or most of my listeners are PI or criminal or divorce, for the most part, when I interact with folks. Employment law, plaintiff side, it's not something that I come across as often. Guests, for sure, clients. I have one plaintiff employment law firm in California that does some pretty high volume. Outside of that, I don't really see it mixed in with a lot of the firms. Even their general practice, it's still one of those, I don't see often. So I don't know why that is, but it seems like more of a niche area that has a lot of room for growth. So
sure. It's challenging the way the laws are written. I think when I tell some people what I do, their initial reaction is, well, how do you have any cases? Can't you just fire anybody for any reason? Right. That's a lot of and I go, that right there is how I get cases.
That's how you get in trouble. Oh man.
But it's tough. It's more challenging than other areas. You're typically not seeing, massive judgments or court awards. But they're not like peanuts either. It's a lot of how the court bases its awards off of is someone's earnings, right? What they lost in income as a result of termination. You can get pain and suffering, emotional harm, just like other areas of law. So you see some really decent size awards, and you typically see millions of dollars. Maybe not unless it's someone had a guaranteed contract and it was breached or whatnot. But it's a rewarding area of law for sure, because you get to help people at a time that they really need the money, because a lot of their income, and most people don't have a ton set aside, and I don't know what the statistics say, but most people.
The ones I've heard, even recently, it's pretty grim out there. If you hear for real, the percentage of population that
2 months of savings, maybe most people have. So it's tough. It's tough when someone loses their job,
Yeah, it's crazy out there. So you know, people rely on their jobs and they could just be that close to losing for one reason or another. As a company or owner, we're not safe from anything economic or whatever as well. So it's a lot of risk with everything we do. But maybe is there a few tips, outside of just running your business? I want to ask another few questions about that. But what's some tips for lawyers listening to that have a lot of employees and have brick and mortar and they're growing and they're hard charging, and then you get a situation like this. What's some tips for the process, for offboarding an employee, for documenting things? I know we have a pretty robust documentation process and things like that, but it doesn't make you say
documentation is great. You want to be fair across the board and apply your policies equally. Try to be as fair as possible. I think one of the biggest things that I tell employers that ask, and I've never represented an employer, I'll say that I've only represented employees. I always wanted to keep it that way so I can say that I've never been on the other side. But friends or family members or whatnot that would ask, I always say, just try to avoid the claim before it gets there. I think a lot of defense attorneys tell employers, just document. They tell them how to defend the case, which is great, but I think you want to try to avoid the claim in the first place. And there's a couple of things that I'd recommend to do to avoid that. You want to terminate people gracefully, amicable as it can be on the way out the door. You don't want to create emotions. You want to try to limit that employee being emotional about it the best that you can. Be graceful. Give people opportunities. Give them documentation. Give them a fair chance to improve if there's issues. Yeah. I think that's the first thing. And then another thing where I see a lot of what infuriates a lot of employees and what leads them to call me is when an employer contests an application for unemployment benefits. You wouldn't believe how many people were not going to bring a case that may actually have one. And they all of a sudden pick up the phone and call me or call another plaintiff's attorney and say, hey, this employer is contesting unemployment benefits. That leads people to talk to attorneys. And once people start talking to attorneys, the attorney may make a case, right? So I don't know. An employer sometimes let's like stick it to somebody for lack of better words. But I think that sometimes backfires. And it's not like the world is viewing you as soft if you don't, just don't contest someone's application for unemployment benefits. Because honestly, chances are they're going to get approved anyway. It's really hard to block someone's unemployment. Not saying it's impossible, but I would refrain from that. And then just other things like be graceful with people's medical benefits on the way out. If there's a way to give them an extra month of coverage while they figure things out, I think people really appreciate that. Don't mess with people's final paychecks, things like that.
Family with medical, right?
Right.
Good luck.
Exactly. Right. So I think those type of things, don't give someone a bad reference. If another employer calls, give them dates of employment and position title only. Say, hey, we have a neutral reference policy. We don't say anything good or bad. Here's when they work there. Kind of keep it to that. So that type of stuff, I think will help you avoid the claim. And if you're worried on the way out, I think giving someone a severance package, like a fair severance package, it makes sense because you can say, hey, we'll pay you for X amount of months or whatnot as long as you sign this agreement. Give them a graceful landing. Now, sometimes those people will still call an attorney. And sometimes if someone doesn't have a claim, it may make them think they have a claim, if you're presenting them with this big old agreement. But, I think that's a most people, if you give them a fair package, they may sign it right away. So that's another thing to think about. There's a million different opinions on those. I think that consult with your defense attorney on that. But yeah, those are just ideas that I've had.
If they sign that, I guess it's basically saying, hey, I'm not going to. Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm not going to pursue a claim. Yeah.
I like the tips on just avoid it as if you can. It's like, to me, it's like handling a bad review for your law firm. You get a bad review come in, you could go on there and respond publicly, knocking down the person that left a bad review publicly in some long-winded response. But that's not the right way to do it. And it's not going to help anybody. It's not going to help you, that's for sure. And so you got to kind of like just swallow it. If you can, solve it with them. And maybe they can get the review taken down. But it sounds very similar to that where you need to take a step back and think about, the other implications versus like trying to stick it to someone that, you just want to stick it to. Carry on with your business. You're growing your firm. Do it gracefully, like you said, and keep moving on. So that's a great tip. Hopefully, no one has that problem out there listening. But
That's right.
good tips. I appreciate that. So back to your business. You're in business for 6 months. This is crazy. I feel like 6 months goes by so fast. Just running. Running a business. So I'm assuming that's, but if you all listen, like, if you go to his website, which website address? It's
It's martaciofirm.com. So my last name, MARTOCCO. That's right.
Yeah. Nice website. He's on podcasts. He's generating leads. He's up and running. Do you have your own office space there in Tampa?
Yes, sir. Yep. Our brick and mortar here in Tampa. And then we have satellite offices in nine other cities. Yep. And we they're like virtual offices, like a WeWork type space. It's called the Industrious. But anytime we're in those cities, you can use the office, and it's great to if you need to meet with a client or just have an office space, in between meetings or hearings or whatever brings you to that city. So yeah,
So that's
I've already
nine
have
states that you serve.
right. So I'm in Florida and eight other states. I actually have two virtual offices in North Carolina, where we get a ton of business from North Carolina. After Florida, the next biggest area that we're in, so we've got Charlotte and Raleigh there. Yeah, I've got to know the state of North Carolina pretty well over the last few years.
I'm 15 minutes from the border here in Virginia, so not too far away. That's super cool. So, I mean, again, so now, what's your team look like?
Yeah, so right now we have one legal assistant. It was my legal assistant from my old firm. I have an associate attorney that worked with me at the old firm as well. They were super excited to come over and help build this firm. They've been an amazing asset. And then we have two call center folks is what I would call them. They're remote intake specialists is the official name, that answer all the intake calls, potential clients they deal with. And then we have three law clerks from Stetson University Law School, which is in Gulfport, Florida, just outside of St. Petersburg. So the law clerks are amazing. They're like really sharp kids. Stetson has some really good, great students there. And I went through the employment law club at Stetson. They actually have a club for it. Yeah. And I spoke at it actually about a year or two ago and got to meet some of the kids. And yeah, they've been really great assets. So I have three from Stetson, and they help us with a lot of the back end drafting documents and things like that, and help us be able to take on a greater volume of cases and give us that support. Yeah, they all work part time remotely from school, but they stop by. They're about an hour away. They stop by anytime they're in town.
Super cool. So, but you have your other two that came with you. They're full time with you.
Full time in the office. Yeah, exactly.
You like Jerry Maguire this thing. You're like, who's going with me? Like, let's get out
here. No, I tried to be as good as possible on the way out. Yeah, that would have been crazy. Jerry Maguire is a great movie. It's an awesome movie. That's actually one of my favorites, man. But no, it was pretty really amicable. My prior firms, we still have a good relationship and all that good stuff. It just got to the point where it was time. Two people that I worked closely with, they were essentially my team at the other firm. So yeah, they were excited for the opportunity.
That's awesome. I mean, still 6 months in, you got multiple people, multiple offices, and 6 months. That's a lot to pull off right there. Just getting all that stuff set up and choosing the cities and setting up agreements and all the good stuff. It's kind of like a WeWork. Are you able to do like Google business profiles with those locations?
Right. It's a full blown like office. I have leases, like legit separate leases with all of them. It's like my space. I have a mailing address. I have a mailbox there. They forward mail. It's a legit office. It's just what we have to disclose on our website is by appointment only, which even our main office is by appointment only. You know, no one's sitting in there daily other than the industrious receptionist that forwards the mail or whatnot. But yeah, they're legit office spaces, and yeah, we use them.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, great growth strategy too. If you're looking at pick up work in those areas and, have an office location that's, when you talk about digital or ads or showing up online, like that local signal is still very important. Actually more important than ever actually right now with Google, and getting listed. So super cool, man. You've just done so much in 6 months. I'm impressed. So, if you're
thinking about it for a little while,
if you're listening and you haven't done half the stuff, you've been in business for a long time, then no excuses, that's for sure. How many podcasts have you been on? Is this something you just started as a new effort?
Right. Yeah, this is the second one that I've done. It's really cool, and thanks so much for having me. It's been a great experience, and I know podcasts are a great way to get your name out there, and hopefully I can bring some value to your listeners and give you some good content that's mutually beneficial.
Yeah, man. I mean, again, it should be a good wake up call for some folks. And I do have a lot of guests that reach out to me that that still work at a firm, like a big firm, and they're like, "Yeah, I'm going to start my own thing." And they usually have like a year or two out. They're kind of thinking, they're planning. And so I've talked to a bunch of them that just reached out to me, and they're planning way ahead. And to some degree, yeah, planning is good, but you'll never be ready completely. So you just got to, at some point, you got to take the jump and get going.
Right. You definitely have to plan and be prepared. But I read something before I made the jump. It was an article. I forgot where it was, actually, but it was a Florida-based attorney that was talking about how he started his own personal injury firm. And he was just like, I got to the point where I said, I'm not doing this another day with a firm. And I just did it. Like, you just got to dive in. And that kind of gave me a wake up call. I've been, I wouldn't say planning, but thinking about it for a while, just like anybody does that's been with a firm a long time and has ambitions to do their own thing. But that kind of made me like think, like, what are you waiting for? Like, you know, let's make it happen. You know what to do. Great advice. The guy's name is slipping my mind as a Miami based though.
Yeah.
It was a great article.
Kind of how I did. I kind of, once it got in my head, I think I was maybe 6 months and I was like gone. But I was just so excited and was waiting for the day to just make it official. But then, you know, it was really young. I was really young. So it's like, I didn't have money. And I was like, well, I can't do it yet. You know, I kind of took that route. But yeah, I just had a girl on, a lady yesterday in Florida out of Palm Beach. And we recorded this week, and we recorded on her 1 year anniversary of starting her own firm. And so but what she's accomplished too, I was just like blown away. Like, she's crushing it. And 1 year in, and so I just love hearing those stories and seeing people take the plunge. I love business, I love entrepreneurship, and I think everyone that is right for it should be doing it. So not everyone's right for it. But it sounds like you're doing a good job. So thanks for sharing, man. I appreciate you coming to share what it's like in today's environment, so starting your own firm and doing it. There's so many good people out there, a lot of listeners, a lot of guests that are just open to help you. And so I would definitely say, you know, connect with folks and get on LinkedIn, and you'd be surprised how fast you get worked into the law firm owner, group out there. It's just very open, and everyone's willing to help each other, and there's just unlimited resources out there. So I just try to be one of them by having the podcast.
Since I've been friends with you like a week on LinkedIn, I saw that I came across someone else's profile, and it said mutual connection, Kevin. I was like, oh, that's awesome. I forgot it was. I was just clicking around. It was someone in law firm, digital marketing, something like that. So yeah, like you said, everybody's a connection to a way, you know.
Once you look around, it's like, oh, wow. Like, okay. Yeah. I'll look at LinkedIn posts and I'll be like, I know 20 people that just liked or commented on the same post. And like, that was a guest on my show, or that's a client or whatever. But it's the people out there are really blazing the trails and like doing well and growing their law firms, and they're vocal about it. Like that's a tight group right there. And you can get your way in. They're open. Everyone's open to help you out, and very approachable. And it's just been great for me to be a part of. So, well, Gary, man, what's the best way for people to connect with you and reach out, other than your website? We mentioned that. What's the best way for them to is it LinkedIn?
Email is probably the best, but just regular email. It's Gary, so G-A-R-Y at martasiofirm.com. So that's email is great. And then I have an Instagram. It's called Employment Law Gary. That's I only have one post so far, but we're trying to get more active on there.
So Employment Law Gary on Instagram.
All one word. Yeah.
Check out one post. He will be posting more.
That's right.
If not, this podcast, we're going to put a bunch of clips and we'll tag him and he'll have some more content.
This will be posted too. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, hey man, I appreciate you sharing today, and I look forward to watching you grow. So
appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for having me, Kevin. Really up. Absolutely. Yeah, man.
All right, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Appreciate you listening to Gary and getting to know him better. And let's push him along, reach out to him, connect with him, and give him some love. And we'll see where he goes from here. So we'll talk to you all soon.
Peace.